and try it. Dream of furniture. Dream that I can buy it. That fancy bed you prayed for, not only bought but paid for. Dream we sign the lease. Leave a small deposit. 3 1/2 rooms with a walk-in closet. We'll ask the local jet set to dine on our dinette set right across the street.
It's been 7 years since Christine Ebersole last performed at the Cafe Carlyle, and she has a pretty good excuse because she's been really busy. We were lucky to have her as a guest when she was starring on Broadway in Grey Gardens back in 2006, and she won her second Tony Award for that one. She was only planning to be at the Carlyle this time for 2 weeks before rehearsals began for the revival of Noel Coward's Blithe Spirit, but popular demand was such that her engagement has been extended for 8 additional shows. And so, if you haven't seen her yet, you still do have a chance now through February 11th. And I feel especially lucky to welcome Christine Ebersole back to this show.
Well, hi. I'm thrilled to be back. Thank you, Len.
And what draws you back to cabaret? Doesn't theater give you a chance to connect with an audience?
Well, it's a different experience. The reason why I love cabaret is because, and it's really one of the scariest things, and at the same time, it's really the most fulfilling because you don't have any character to hide behind. It's just you and the audience. So in that way, it's kind of nerve-wracking. But once you get up there on the stage and have this opportunity to share yourself and the songs with an audience, it's quite a nice camaraderie.
Well, in the past, there was also the fact that in cabaret, you were in a much smaller room, so you mm-hmm. didn't have to belt everything. But today, there's miking all over Broadway shows. Mm-hmm. So has that changed that experience?
Well, no, but it's when you sort of assess just the physics of the space, it does really kind of inform the way you're going to perform. You know, you're not going to be screaming out when somebody's right in front of you having their salad, you know, as you would to play to the last balcony.
And you also have the, in this case, you can choose the material. When you're playing,
that's right.
When you're
that's
in a musical,
right.
Your character sings certain songs and that's what you're stuck
mm-hmm.
with.
That's right.
So what about the material that you've chosen here? How did you choose them? Did you have a specific theme in mind?
Yes. Well, I got together with my friend Scott Whitman, who directed the show, and we had worked together. We did the last act at the Carlyle in 2002. I've known Scott for almost 30 years, and so he knows what I can do, and I love his sensibility. And he came up with this idea of doing Depression-era music because it mirrors exactly what's happening, you know, with economics today. So together we collaborated and came up with these songs, and sort of I wrote pattern that was true to my life, and we sort of wove these things together.
Although, you sing I Can't Give You Anything But Love, I've Got $5,
mm-hmm.
but you resisted singing Buddy, Can You Spare a Dime? Too pathetic?
No, it just... It's not that we avoided it. It's just that when you have an hour, you know, you just, those are the songs that we ended up picking that I think really told the story that we wanted to tell.
Including some that haven't been heard a lot, like Hard Times Come Again No More. Stephen Foster wrote that 150 years ago.
That's
was
right.
there another depression at that time?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and do my history. I'm sure there was.
But did you come up with that?
No, that was Scott. That was Scott. I had never heard that song before.
The last time you performed at the Carlyle, you'd won your first Tony for 42nd Street. Mm-hmm. Is it a different experience now, 7 years later, after all of that Broadway experience and a second Tony?
Well, I think it was, you know, of course, it's equally as exciting, but it was different winning a Tony for Grey Gardens because I wasn't doing a revival, and it was something that I was in on from the ground floor. And so it had a special meaning. It wasn't any less important, but it was just a different kind of a
feeling. Audiences are also coming with different expectations.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you ever do, you know.
More pressure on you, perhaps.
Well, in a way, but I also, too, spent my life really on the Broadway scene, particularly doing revivals. So you're always compared, you know, and not. You don't ever measure up necessarily to the person who originated the role. So,
well, I can't imagine anybody in the audience remembers Helen Morgan's version of Bill, except maybe from a record. But
yeah,
so you're allowed to come up with your own interpretation. Well, how much interpretation can you do? I mean, you can do a lot in cabaret, but I remember reading that I'm trying to remember which composer it was. He would be furious if people didn't sing the song exactly. As he wrote it.
Mm. Well, I always try to
Richard
adhere.
Richard Whiting, that's who it was. Mm.
Well, I always try to adhere to the music. You know, I don't really try to vary too much in that way. But, you know, every once in a while you'll be feeling an emotional moment that might dictate another note.
Well,
it's not the music.
Do you sing differently for different composers? Bill,
yes,
for example, as
course.
Opposed to 42nd Street?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's you also are mindful of the period as well. And it just, you know, they produce different sounds.
But you also seem to sing in two vocal styles, one using more of your low range, a rich kind of sound, your mezzo, and then there's this coloratura thing that you do.
Yeah. Well, I just have been blessed with a wide vocal range. It's about three octaves or so, and then some. And it's always something that I've loved to do. I love to sing. So, and I'm also interested in all sorts of kinds of music. So, this is a platform that I can really express all those different styles of music.
Many of the songs have been done before in fast tempos, but you've chosen to really slow them down. 42nd Street and I Can't Give You Anything But Love, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've always sung 42nd Street at the fast tempo because in a show you had no choice.
Well, actually, the character Dorothy Brock sings that in that exact tempo.
Oh, really?
In the beginning, when she sings In the Heart of Little Old New York, it's, you know, that's the exposition, and that's not it's not at a fast tempo.
But when songs are sung fast, in some ways, aren't they easier to do? Because you could just, as long as you get all the words okay, you really don't have to worry very much about nuance.
About sustaining notes, really? Well, I never really thought of it that way. It's really about communicating the idea of the song and the message of the song. And sometimes it can come quickly, which can also be a challenge because you have to be able to get all the lyrics in and make them understood.
The reason I was asking that is when you're, I was thinking, when you're on Broadway, you're performing a song in character.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in cabaret, you are Christine Ebersole.
Yeah, but it's also Christine Ebersole expressing and conveying and communicating the emotion of the song and the message of the song.
I wonder how you react to things like, in a rave review, Stephen Holden saying, you're a hybrid of Bernadette Peters and a toned-down Madeleine Kahn.
Yeah, well, I think that's a great compliment. And yet at the same time, I'm me. I consider it a great compliment. I love both of those ladies.
Well, writers love it when they're compared to Tolstoy and Joseph Conrad.
Well, I'm in good company then if I'm compared to those two ladies.
You play homage to the late Eartha Kitt.
Mm-hmm.
She would have been performing at the Carlisle
this winter.
Mm-hmm. Is she at all an influence?
Well, yes. It's interesting. I've never met her. And yet I feel that she really influenced this particular endeavor at the Carlisle because this was her spot. This was when she was supposed to be performing, and then she took ill. And it was very last minute that I was called to fill in for her. So I feel that, you know, I always believe in and feel the angelic presence of people that have gone before. I don't think they leave. They just leave their bodies. And I think that she's around, and certainly particularly just who she was as a person. You know, she didn't really follow the herd, and she was really a unique and you know, stood by her principles. And I think that's something to admire.
My guest is Christine Ebersole, who's performing at the Cafe Carlisle for an extended run through the 11th of this month. The Carlisle is at 35 East 76th Street at Madison Avenue. And if you want more information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org for ticket details. This is Tuesday through Saturday, 8:45 p.m. Additional show, 10:45 on Saturday?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that a lot? Is that, that's not as wearing as doing 8 shows a week
well,
on Broadway.
But that it wouldn't be, I guess, except I'm rehearsing during the day for Blythe Spirit. So I rehearse during the day and do the show at night.
That,
and have
that's
a family
wild.
In New Jersey.
And you've moved to New Jersey from Hollywood.
Yes, that's right. Moved from Hollywood to Maplewood.
Well, they both have wood in their names,
that's
but
right.
It has
what
to be a major
a
culture
makes,
shock.
It. It's not really. It's not really because Hollywood really, it's not really a city like New York. I mean, what Michael Blakemore said, that a city dictates, is dictated by if you can walk in it. And you really don't walk in Hollywood.
Unless you're in Westwood.
They look at you strangely.
It's true. But for years, people felt that they had to live out there because if they want to work in films, the just going to the parties and making doing all the networking was important.
Mm-hmm.
Less so today?
I believe so, yes. Certainly there's been tax incentives of things have been moving out of Hollywood. And Ugly Betty, for example, that shoots now in New York. And they've been other cities have been providing tax incentives for production companies to move there. So I think you can kind of be anywhere now, really.
Well, your latest film is Confessions of a Shopaholic.
That's right.
But that's a Hollywood film, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But it was shot in New York.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was Tootsie? Because you
Tootsie
were
was also shot in New York. Uh-huh.
And Amadeus was
Amadeus
not shot
was
in Vienna.
No, it was in Czechoslovakia, in Prague.
Oh, it was.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what you do, you're going to wind up traveling to make films.
Yes, that's true.
You're a native of Winnetka, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
So did you get started in Chicago?
Well, I was in New Performers of 1971. that was like a local television program, and I ended up in the chorus of that. And but really, most I went to school at McMurray College in Jacksonville, Illinois, and I was told by a professor to leave school and go to New York, which was kind of a very generous thing to say, actually. And luckily, I had the support of both of my parents. So I moved to New York at 20 years old and went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Yeah, so the acting side is important to you. You're in Blythe Spirit, and that's not a musical.
No, it's not. In fact, I've done more plays than musicals, actually.
But I suspect you would miss doing one or miss doing the other if you only focused on one.
I'm just glad that I can do it all. Really, I mean, I don't do ballet.
I was going to ask you about
that. I can't
dance
on point. No. That would be comedy.
Dancing
would be
with
comedy.
The stars is the next thing.
Oh, no, no. No. No, but I feel very blessed that I'm able to move in, you know, different circles, to be able to do plays and musicals, and to be able to do cabaret, because that's what I love probably more than anything. But, you know, it is easier doing a play than in a musical. That is probably the most demanding of all, is doing a musical.
Ah,
absolutely,
and
without
in,
doubt.
In Blythe Spirit, you also have this wonderful cast, including Angela Lansbury.
Yes.
So, and actors tell me that if you're with a lot of other good actors, it makes the whole thing so much more fun.
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, my, yes. It's just a delight, absolute delight.
Haven't you said that you have some weird synchronicity with Angela Lansbury in terms of roles you've tackled?
Yes. She's always been an inspiration to me because when I first started out as a waitress in New York City and I got cast in Angel Street and I played the part of Nancy, the impish maid, and that was Angela Lansbury's first film role.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first Broadway show. And really, it wasn't even like, it was really my first role because I wasn't like I was working out of town and, you know, had my equity card. I didn't even have my equity card. I was working at the Lions Rock and then on Broadway and then 3 weeks later begging for my job back at the Lions Rock. So it was a humbling experience. But yes, that's, I always sort of look at that and think, oh my gosh, I would love to be able to have the career like Angela Lansbury's had.
When was the last time that you waited tables? you've been working pretty steadily for a long time.
That was the last job. That was the last job I had waiting tables was at the Lions Rock.
And will Blight Spirit be an open run?
No. Well, it's supposed to run till the end of July.
And do you know, are you one of those people like the opera singers who knows what you're going to be doing in 2 years from now?
No, I don't. But I do have some concert bookings beyond that. Singing engagements beyond July 31st.
But meanwhile, we have this rare opportunity to see you at the Cafe Carlyle. 7 years is just too long.
Well, yeah, there's been a lot of things going on in between, so I'm just so grateful to be back there.
And the last time you were here, it was to talk about playing Edie Beale and Little Edie Beale in Grey Gardens.
Yeah.
That was
quite an experience. Amazing experience. Life-changing experience.
Christine Ebersole, you can still catch her at the Carlyle. She's there in an extended run through the 11th of this month. The Carlyle at 35 East 76th Street at Madison Avenue. And if you want more information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. We have all the stuff about the times and how to get tickets. And then I hope that we can see you for Blight Spirit, because that sounds like it's going to be fabulous.
Oh, please do. Please do. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you again, Christine Ebersole.
Thank you so much for having me.
The lullaby of Broadway, the hip hooray and ballyhoo, the lullaby of Broadway, the rumble of a subway. Daffodils who entertain, Angelos and Maxis, when a Broadway baby says goodnight, it's early in the morning. Manhattan babies don't sleep tight until the dawn. Good night, baby. Good night. Milkman's on his way.
Not to be redundant, but I thought I'd remind you one more time, Christine Ebersole will be performing at the Cafe Carlyle through February 11th. For more information and tickets, visit our show page at WNYC.org. Up next, Liaquat Ahmed explains how the decisions of the world's central bankers worsened the world's economics and led to the Great Depression. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.